I've thrown my tubes time after time. I've done my figure eights, but my net's got no slide. And big mistakes, I've made a few.
Steve,
how on earth were you able to get Freddie Mercury outboard Palmero to do that intro, buddy? That was insane.
I pulled some strings. It was not easy.
Right.
Freddie Mercury outboard is a living legend at the Muskie Shop, and
yes,
he has the voice of an angel.
He is the crooner of all crooners. Really?
Yeah, wait till next week because I got Mickniac lined up.
Well,
for his last public appearance before he moves to Florida.
They're supposed to do, like, what is it, Bulldog Hamian Rhapsody or something?
Yes, he's a big Queen fan, so it's probably going to be Bulldog Rhapsody in blue.
Right.
And
in the key of F major.
He's a Cisco pattern guy. I mean, he likes blue baits, fish the Tullaby, as he say.
Tullaby. We also have a special guest on the line.
He is the
captain of the Muskie Shop Boys with a Z tournament team, Jim the Tube Screamer Stewart. Jimbo, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, guys. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah. Jim, actually,
have you guys recovered from the fishing tournament?
Barely. That brings up. We can talk about my crazy flight here in a second, but last week's podcast sucked. It was awful because we had to get up at like 4 a.m. and go to a tournament. So what it was is Jim, Jay, and myself fished a tournament in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? There were 2 fish caught in the entire tournament. And we caught them both. So that was it. Guys, this tournament,
it was awesome.
We went up there and all these illustrious YouTube channels, you know them, you see them, you watch them, show up and they're coming up there to film for YouTube and have this tournament. And what was funny is the first day when we got there, we moved the crap out of fish.
Yep.
Right?
Immediately. I think your second cast. Jim and I were still switching on the electronics, and
it
then
was
you're
the
like,
first
hey,
cast
there's one.
Yeah. Yep. I had a 40,
first cast, okay.
40-something coming on the first cast on a Titan. And I was like, whoa. That's either a real bad sign or a real good sign. And
regardless, we knew we were in a good area.
We were in a good area, And what had happened is we're looking at this, and you go, this is perfect musky conditions, first day. And we're talking pre-fishing, right? Most tournaments you have a pre-fishing day.
Humid, warm.
Low-hanging clouds.
It looked like it was going to rain any second.
Right.
Classic, throw out the fast-moving stuff. You're going to get fish following or, moving on something.
And you come out on this thing and you go, this looks like, if I was to write down on a piece of paper what I wanted for musky fishing anywhere, that's what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we go out, Jim's moving fish, Jay's moving fish, I'm moving fish. And we're fishing a strip of weeds, and for you guys in Minnesota, you know this already, or guys that are headed there, or guys that want to go there, we're talking September, vegetation is at a minimum. Probably realistically a weed strip that was 5 to 8 feet wide at best. But we got in it and we got in it quick and you went, everything's here. Every fish in the entire system is bucked up on this thing because there's bait clouds. We were seeing bait balls. It's one of those days where just all heck's breaking loose and it looks nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to Jim, and Jim's driving the boat. He's on the big motor. I'm on the trawler. And I said, don't set the hook. And that's a tough thing to do. We're looking at this point. There are so many muskies moving. You could sit there and just sore mouth. Well, I would say if we had really tried to bear down on them, we could have probably put four or five in the boat.
Yeah, it seemed like it for sure, didn't it?
Absolutely. You know, yeah. It was like, whoa. The reason we weren't setting the hook and the reason we weren't sore mouth and fish is Jay had looked at it. I looked at it. Jim looked at it. And my favorite new line from the podcast, FLA, we made an assessment. Thank you, old Greg. The assessment was this. This is the best looking day I've seen in ages. But guess what's coming? Right?
180 degree change in the weather. Hard cold front.
Right. I'm coming and hell's coming with me.
Big wind.
We went out there that first evening. I was in a t-shirt and jeans and I was warm. You know, you go, this is not normal. Humidity's at a peak. Everything you went in for muskie fishing. But tournament fishing doesn't start until the tournament begins. You know, you go, what do you do? And so we're looking at this scenario going, now is not the time to set the hook. However, we did have a great laugh. And for all you podcasters, you'll crack up. Jay and I and Jim are out on the water. We're throwing an ace bait. If you guys have not thrown an ace bait, they're a perennial favorite at the muskie shop. Just a rock solid, pretty budget conscientious spinner bait. Right?
Yeah, you bet.
And three sizes
to meet any kind of condition. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm seeing, and this is a point because we're going to talk about cold front masterclass here in a second, but the thing I'll throw out is this, is we started seeing bait balls on the graph, and then visually, we were seeing schools of bait just popping everywhere, and we broke out the ace bait, and I believe that's the, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, the half ounce, I believe, is what we were looking at.
Yeah, it's in that range. Yeah, right. I think the bait weighs about an ounce. It has an ounce or three-quarter ounce head, yeah. It's
right.
A small one.
The small ace.
Small
bait.
Ace. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, downside, yeah.
And it's a downsized thing, I said. Break one of those out, you know, break that out in white, and I'm throwing, and I set the hook, and it was just knee-jerk because the strike was so hard. I could not hold myself back, you know? And I set the hook, and I mean, it was a hard hit. I set the hook and got him. And I'm sort of like, I wish I didn't got him, but I got him. And then it gets a huge smallie, right? And then I go, I don't know what that is.
Jim's a grouper.
Right. We go, is that a miniature grouper? What is this? Get the net. And Jambalaya proceeds to slip the net under the biggest rock bass I have ever seen anyone catch.
What was it, 2 ounces shy of a state record, too?
So there's a two-way tie for the Minnesota state record, and you have to break it by a little bit.
Yeah.
Had we gone through the process, we could be in the conversation for a tie if we cared enough or somewhere in that. I set the hook on this state record class rock bass, and we're like, what is this? I mean, we're muskies nonstop, and you go, what is going on here?
It looked like an ocean fish.
It really did. It looked like a miniature grouper.
It did.
And if you've ever caught a rock bass, they're usually the size of the palm of your hand. They're tiny little fish.
Yeah, not this beast.
It was hilarious.
It'll be in the video next week. The video is coming
so
out next
funny.
Week. That part's in there. It's some good footage of it.
So
you're like, Google it. What's the state record?
It.
Somebody Google it.
We were so like, we were just that thing eating one more minnow away from it. It was such a laugh. We're cracking up. You know, we have rock bass in Tennessee. You got obviously rock bass up there. They're just a nuisance little tiny fish. For it to hit a musky bait, it was a big rock bass, and we were dying laughing.
Yeah.
So we throw this
thing. It was a good start. It was a great start.
Oh, we were just like, okay. So Jim's got a pretty good LiveWell system there on these, but he's a Ranger owner, okay? Don't hold it against him, but he's got a Ranger. You know, he eats a lot of cheese. Jim's yep. like, you know. So we've got a LiveWell. So we throw that thing in there and we're laughing about it. But I actually called the Wisconsin DNR and I talked
Minnesota.
To them. Or excuse me, Minnesota. Actually, you know what? That's not Jay, that's the
you
funny
did call.
Part.
I did Wisconsin call. DNR. She's like, what lake is that? What county is that? You're like, it's Cass Lake.
Double Freordian slip right there or something weird because I did call.
Great.
I'm on the hold with the Wisconsin DNR, which I've always said this, like the Wisconsin DNR is probably the best phone service I've ever seen, right? Like, they're all over it, and I'm talking to her. I said, I am, like, 99.999% certain I've caught the new state record rock bass, right? Mm-hmm. And she's all excited. You guys heard it on speakerphone. And yeah. I'm kneeling down on speakerphone, and here comes, like, a 38, right?
Yeah.
I have, at this point, you want to talk about serious tournament angling. I've cut the hooks off this bait. I don't want to sore mouth them. If they'll hit it, and they don't get a hook in them, guess what they'll do tomorrow? They'll hit it again, right?
Right.
And so I'm fishing hookless, and here comes this fish that just lights it up. And me and Jay are laughing, you know, 37, 38. I'm on the phone with him. And because we were just giggling so much, I actually made the wrong call, and I called Wisconsin. And she's like, yeah, we don't handle state records for Minnesota.
Very politely.
Yep.
Very, very polite. Well, it's always funny if you're calling like the DNR in Wisconsin, you sound like I do. Hey, man, I just caught me a rock bass. They're like, excuse me, sir, what? Rock bass! So she was very kind to put up with it. Finally, I get a hold of the Minnesota DNR. And they were all over. I actually sent them the picture. We girthed this thing. We're talking, what is it, 12 and 3 quarters, like a 12-inch girth rock bass. It's like yep. ridiculous. I know this is not the rock bass podcast. We never talk about other species, but we were dying laughing. But we actually, and Jay's got the video proof of this. I don't know if it's in the episode. I walked this thing in a bucket alive into a grocery store, by the way.
Yeah, that part didn't make the video, but the most shot on my phone, but yeah, it is hilarious.
It's hilarious. We got it weighed up and we're like, I'm not looking for ties, I'm looking for obliteration, you know what I'm saying? So turned him loose. Jim turned him loose. We had him in the live well, he's all good, but there are giant rock bass. We're dying. But
yeah, I mean, so basically, I mean, we spent an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours out there,
right?
Thursday
and saw like six
as
or
got
seven
there,
yeah.
And we're like, we're out of here. We know this is going to be our spot.
That's the spot. But what was happening and what was coming on the horizon, I don't think anybody else realized. So
I don't know if they did. I mean, I think.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so as the story unfolds, we load up the boat. Jim's got the cool, like if any boat I could have is Silver Sparkle, I have a soft spot for that. So Jim's got this big Silver Sparkle Ranger. It looks awesome. And we're loading that up and we crawl in there. I've slept 2 hours and 48 hours, right?
Yeah.
If you guys think I talk a lot on the podcast, I'm in the truck just talking about anything because I just don't want to fall asleep. I'm actually practically annoying. We've got out there and fished, and we like, at this point, I'm looking at Jim. He's pale as a sheet. Jay's pale as a sheet, and I'm sure I am too because we're starving to death, right?
Yep.
Going to the lodge. We got to eat something. We go to the lodge, get in there, and we meet the other guys from the tournament. Some great guys. Just wonderful people. You know, all the teams that came in. We had people from Pennsylvania, Lake St. Clair. You know, one of my favorites, a guy named Ben Stone that films with Canel Gratis now, and all these other different people that are there. We get mm-hmm. to this lodge. We check in, and I'll say this. Shameless plug for them. But they did take care of our rooms for us, is Rutgers Lodge in Minnesota. I was impressed by that place.
Yeah, very nice.
Very nice. The food, however, like the lodge is really nice, but the food was stale. We get in there and eat. We have this big dinner with a bunch of the participants and all this stuff. But one thing I'll point out, because I'm in a previous podcast, Jay, remember, like, the guy's like, why don't you fish tournaments?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm like, I just don't like to fish tournaments because I just don't, because I go into kill mode. Like, I'm sitting here going, listen, if you want to get West Virginia in the parking lot, if you want to find out what kind of creaker I am, let's go, right? I will throw hands all night. Like, line up. Let's do this thing. Like, and Jim, I could tell you this, folks. Me and Jim were sitting there with a good buddy, Josh. A couple nights later, I heard a pool stick hit the floor, and I pop up like a freaking gopher. I'm like, let's do this thing.
Right, you know? I had no idea what was going on. I was just sitting there. I didn't even move. And Steve and him, the other guy, were like, oh, it's go time. I'm like, what are you talking?
Yes, exactly. You hear a pool stick hit the floor, somebody's getting their ass beat, son. It's just like, there's a sound to it. There's a different crack to when a pool stick hits the floor. And I'm ready. I'm from West Virginia, buddy. We throw hands, right? Sunday, we handle snakes. Monday, we're throwing snakes. I mean, it just is what it is. You know, you're just, it's go time. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm just ready to, you know, at any.
Like a flick of a switch.
Oh, flick the switch, baby. Don't turn me. Jay, do not turn me on if you can't turn me off. Because it's coming. Beating of the week, Jay. Just a tornado of pain. So
anyway. Tennessee waterfall.
Yes, sir. But you know, we're down there, and I don't like competing because I'm too competitive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just the I know me, right? Like Matt Raley, who fishes the PMTTs. I love Matt because Matt's just like the quietest church mouse's guy you've ever met, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even know if he cares. If I fished that stuff, I would be like in the biggest trouble of my life. I would just nonstop be just talking. So we get to this dinner. We get to this dinner, and I'm listening. We're trying to hold court a little bit. You know, I make the bold move of sitting at the head of the table and proceed to order my wonderful steak. Thank you, Jim. And we're sitting there. Jay complains about not getting his turkey wrap, okay? You know, me and Jim have been talking about that for days. Jay, if Jay orders food, it's going to be wrong, okay? Let's just get it right.
It just will be. I mean,
right. Jay could order a bag of Lay's.
I'm used to it.
Jay could order a bag of Lay's potato chips, and they'll bring him like Underwood deviled ham, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. No, right. Here's your sardines, sir. I ordered Lay's. No, you ordered sardines.
Here's your sardines, sir.
So we're eating, and at this point, I could chew the leg off a freaking coyote. I'm starving.
Yeah.
So I'm listening. But we're listening to everybody else. And this is the thing. Like,
the conversations, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Probably the most worthless thing I've ever heard in my entire life is what I call dock talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Old guy standing at a dock going, yeah, over, you know, off of that Johnson's Rock, I caught me a big walleye. Right? That's what they sound like down here. Up there, they're just like, oh, yeah, I saw 1450s mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
I've never heard at that dinner, I've never heard more about 50s in my life. Everybody at that table saw a 50 incher except for the three of us. And I'm worried mm-hmm. going, well, you know, it won't take much then if they're seeing that many big fish. But the one thing I'll say is this, and I'm just telling you guys, and this is friendly competition, and I'm just explaining the moment by moment kind of vloggish, you're in the head of Stephen Paul, which is Terror Dome, we can all admit, if you're inside my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Not a peaceful place.
Not a peaceful place. Every word that's coming out of people's mouth, I'm in tune with because I want to know what they know, but I want to know what they really know.
Yeah.
This is an aside real quick. For all you musicians, there's a guy there, and he was trying his best, but man, they do not have a tuna guitar in Minnesota. But anyway, moving on. Me and Jay are sitting there like, we'd hear, ah! It's like audibly painful. And aside from that, I'm just trying my best to be a fly on the wall and listen. I'm hearing hot fish. I'm hearing follows. And of all the teams, one guy boated a fish that was like 35, 36 on a topwater. Okay.
That's but it.
I'm hearing big fish, big fish, big fish, big fish, big fish. Is it posturing? Possibly. You know, are people telling white lies because they want to look good in front of everybody? We're looking people in the face going, the biggest fish we saw might have been 41 or 42.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a 41, 42. Saw him 48. Okay, well, cool. Mm-hmm. Put it in the net. But the one thing I heard, where all these wonderful fish that everyone had seen, but I didn't hear a single person address the cold front that was coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
After I brought it up.
And Jay goes, gonna really change tomorrow. It's gonna be different. And whether they did or not, whether people were being guarded, I don't know. And I don't care. I'm just telling like all the podcast listeners because we're all bros.
Mm-hmm.
If you gotta go, if it's Friday and you gotta go fishing on Saturday, or you gotta fish a tournament, or you're gonna fish against your best friend, or you're gonna take your 5-year-old son out to catch your first muskie, make an assessment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Jim and John are headed out and you guys are going to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
What are you gonna do, Jim? You're gonna look at the weather and make an assessment based upon all your cumulative knowledge of what muskie should be doing.
Exactly, for sure.
And when I'm sitting here and I'm hearing burning blades and topwater, it's freaking 61, 62 degree water before the cold front. And we're trying to sore mouth them. So we get through the dinner. It's a lovely event. Everyone's exceptionally kind. We met some wonderful people.
Yep.
But my takeaway was the conversation was about hot fish. Tomorrow is not going to be hot fish.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's going to be double hog shit awful. It just is, you know, and you know, Jay, and I love Jay, and you guys love me on the podcast. Jay is like a moth, right? His attention span is like a moth, and he's poking me in the shoulder going, look at that bush outside. I got a guy talking to me and Jay's looking at a bush, right? That's Jay for you. You pointed out some bush outside the window of the freaking bar and go, look at the hell how hard it's blowing.
Oh, I'm talking about the wind. Okay, well, yeah, I'm just in tune with them. It's already picking up.
Jim's laughing.
The bottom's going to fall out, baby. Pay attention.
Jim's I love you, but Jim's laughing because he knows I'm right. You know,
I remember hearing it.
Yeah,
Jay.
I got some guy looking at me trying to talk about this. Jim's, look at that bush. Do you see that bush out there, Steve? I'm talking to some. Look at the bush. And he's completely right. And the thing is that this bush is laid over like it's in a tornado. So anyway, we go upstairs. And here we are. Team Captain Jim Stewart has to go get a Murphy bed from downstairs, but you know, we drew straws, I guess.
Yep.
As an aside, Jim, I'll say this, we never bash a product on this show, right?
No.
You know, you get a bad, you know, musky baits, they work different places, right? You might have one musky bait that's great in Pennsylvania, but it's bad in Wisconsin, so we don't discriminate. However, Toastmaster coffee pots from the Dollar General are the biggest pieces of shit ever made.
Oh, man.
You thought I was going somewhere with a product. You didn't know I'm going to the coffee pot of doom.
And so, Steve's right, man.
Listen, spend the extra $4 at Walmart.
Yeah.
Jim, how bad was the coffee pot?
Oh, my goodness. Steven and I love a really thick cup of coffee to get you going.
Oh, it's tar.
I make this really black coffee. Well, anyways, I wanted a little bigger coffee pot for the three of us, mm-hmm, instead of just a little bitty thing. Well, anyways, we get up there and I get it all going and I go about the business, whatever, getting ready. And Stephen, about 10 minutes later, walks over and says, you got something going on with the coffee pot over there.
We got a flood!
There's coffee all over the place.
Yeah, he was screaming.
Like, oh, yeah.
What a mess. It was a huge mess and the thing just didn't work at all. It was brand new.
I made the same. I was laughing so hard because I saw the box.
Yep.
And one time I was headed on my way to Canada, I stopped and it's like the $12 coffee pot from like Dollar General, right? Like Toastmaster is the name of it. And I was like, I'm just grabbing that. And to be honest with you, I don't drink coffee unless I'm with you guys, right? Because yep. If I'm up there with you guys, I've been on a flight or I've driven all night and Jim makes what I call Minocqua mud.
Oh yeah.
And it'll like, I saw Depth Raider Don one time close to a heart attack on that stuff.
That is no lie.
we're doing inventory on the store. Depth Raider Don's like 70 years old. He's like,
his eyes were like saucers. He didn't sleep for like 2 days.
like Jim's coffee is the kind of coffee that will make you chew through your own lip.
It's awesome.
It's all, yeah. So if you're going to do some coffee and you're not on the musky road trip with friends, do not buy the Toastmaster. It is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen. So our first day there, here's poor Jim. And I love him. He grabs every towel in the entire room. Yep. So it's like, and it's like, we're all very polite Midwestern or Southern people. So we're like, we don't want to go downstairs, but like, hey, we ruined every towel in this room. We want a new towel. So we all just suffer and we smell. We get up. Yeah. And the thing I'll say is this, and it is going to the Cold Front Masterclass on some level. Is the second assessment we made. We know a cold front's coming. We know the forecast. The forecast hasn't budged, right? It's not back and forth. And I made a joke downstairs to everybody. And I'm going up to, I'm only drinking Pepsi, right? And mm-hmm. So I go up to this young gentleman who happens to be behind the bar and I order two more Pepsis. And this one guy goes, hey, old man, first time in my entire life, by the way, I've ever been called old man. Hey, old man, you got to get up early. And I said, no, I don't. I said, it's a cold front and the wind's blowing.
Who said that to you?
Well, they'll go unnamed. But
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. Early. Yeah. Yeah.
No, we don't.
And the guy's like, well, tournament starts at 6:30, bro. Right. And I said, well, ours doesn't start till about noon. Said they're not, nothing's gonna hit. And this is after we had a conversation. I'll tell you this, probably the biggest laugh we had was as a person that asked us if we could handle the big water because they're from Wisconsin, I'm from Tennessee, and I cracked up. I'm sitting here going, meet me out there at freaking Three Sisters on Eagle with about a 40-mile-hour blow is all I'm saying. But, you know, come see me out there. Bring your 18-foot tiller out there, and we'll see if you can make it to meet me. But knowing big water, knowing how wind affects fish, knowing that every fish in that system was eaten that night.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, it's a veritable buffet. I ain't getting up early. I tell Jim I might have another Pepsi Cola.
Yep.
Right? So I have maybe I have a couple too many. You know? Maybe I fought Jay. You'll never know. They finally, after the struggle ensues in the elevator, they get me in bed. I'm teasing. But we get up and it's leisure pace. Right? You know, we knew that we didn't need to be there early because there's this transitional period. The evening mm-hmm. bite would have been fire. Had the tournament taken place on Thursday, Friday, different scenario. We knew mm-hmm. we were facing awful conditions. Conserve energy, focus on the better part of the day. I think we launched at what, 10:45, 11?
Yeah, yep.
Right.
We were fishing by 11. Yeah, the first day. Yeah.
And then I'll hand it off to Jim quickly on Jim made the decision on where we were going to go and why we're going to go there. Right. And if you guys are listening, you don't have, and I'm not a tournament angler. I'm just a idiot, but if I'm going to face giant wind conditions in a cold front, I'm going to go for isolated areas. So Jim, talk about for a second, what the decision you made on where we're going and why we're going there.
Yeah. Well, it all based around the weather and the forecast and the cold front coming in. And I think you got to be able to manage your boat and manage your area that mm-hmm. you're wanting to fish. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't do, sure, you want to fish where the wind's blowing and the fish are going to be, get you, the bait gets worked up in certain areas. But if you can't manage it, it does you no good. Mm-hmm. It does you no good. So, hey, this is a new lake. We found a spot. It's going to be out of the wind for the most part. You know, there was some mm-hmm. wind in there, so there's disturbance on the water. And, you know, I just thought, hey, let's fish this area. It's not huge. We can manage it. We know there's fish here. So let's hunker down and just go after them. And that's kind of what we did.
And what we talked about in the boat is stay and make it pay.
Yep. That's for sure. That's 100% right.
And yeah, certainly gave Spot Lock a workout on that boat.
Well, but Steve, however, what I'll say is this. And guys, I'm not, again, I just said a second ago, I'm not a tournament angler. However, I'm a guide. And let's say you pick January 17th. I don't know what the weather's going to be. If January 17th blowing 25, 35 miles an hour, I have to figure it out. If you and your buddy say, hey, Jim, it's Steve. How you doing? When are you off work? Oh, I'm off Saturday. Let's go fishing Saturday. Right?
Yep.
Whatever Saturday may bring, you have to contend with. And that's what we're getting at. We just had an awful set of scenarios that we had to contend with. Jim's got a big boat that can handle big water. However, you've got three guys that don't want to deal with big water. We could have done what we did in a 17-foot John boat, Alumacraft. It never got dangerous where we were at.
Yeah, it didn't. Nope.
Not unless we ventured out from that area.
Right. Well, there there was a couple of times where we got
there's
wet.
A couple times. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, we do need to check out.
Right.
You know, mark X and Y off the list. And we did. Went back to our milk run.
But they did nothing for us.
Nope.
But nothing. In that scenario, you go. And Jim, I'll say this: we talked to a buddy of mine, Josh. He went out fishing in the same scenario, and he's running a 1648.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny little boat. He said, well, I stayed off the big wind, and I fished the edges and yada, yada, yada. So it's mm-hmm. not about the mm-hmm. boat. We were hearing the day of the tournament, everybody's getting blown around so much and this and that and this and that. The strategy being find on a lake. And this is overarching for whether it's a tournament or not. You have the wind side of the lake, right? We've always heard mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
The lake side that is taking the weather. Bam, bam, bam. All the bait fish are pushed there. There's a slack side, though.
Yeah.
And we made a living for, 30-some hours on the slack side of the lake.
Yeah.
Because
I've said it many times, Stephen, and just been fishing with you this mm-hmm. year, stick and stay and make it pay.
Yep.
And it truly pays off if you do that. I mean, we've seen it.
And we've done it a million times, the video that came out this week, that big 52. Oh, some people, mm-hmm. is it 50? I'm freaking like 6'2", 225. Yeah, it's 52. Come see me at the boat dock and we'll measure 52 inches across your face. I'll throw hands so fast it'll make your head spin around, buddy.
It's amazing people still get worked up about that.
Jay,
stuff.
I'll say this.
It's just an absolute joke.
Jay, that's I might. The thing is, I'll say this. You want to do it, let's do it. Because I'm a big old son of a bitch. I might sound like a weirdo, but I'm from West Virginia, son. I will beat your ass. Anyway, moving on real quick. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest. You guys know what I'm saying. Anyway.
No, I think Stephen, man, your boat control is what is also really good in these situations where you say stick and stay and make it pay. Gosh, I've learned so much because I used to get on the trolling motor and you just start working a brake or you start working a big weed flat or whatever your structure is and you just start going.
Well,
and gosh, I don't do that anymore.
No, and that's the one thing. And I'm serious. We have a squad going of me, Jay, and Jim. And you guys that are fishing and you're looking for a fishing buddy, find people, because I'll say this, and this is an aside. We didn't go up there trying to win a tournament. We went up there trying to expand our YouTube presence, make new customers for the Muskie Shop, and just be good ambassadors for the brands we have, right?
Right.
But I'll say this. The three of us together are dangerous because we complement one another, and you're talking about that as far as like, hey, you do this well. And we'll get to boat control in a second. But one thing I'll say about the people you're fishing with is fish with people that compliment you, and it's not an argument. That's the one thing I'll say that's so good about us is, like, we never argue in the boat. It's never like,
you probably get that quite a bit when you have, like, a pair of guys when you're guiding. You know, does that happen quite often?
Not on a guide trip. I'm just talking about fishing.
The two buddies that are in there guiding with you. They're come on, Pete. You know, don't bring that in so fast.
They don't do that because the guide's the boss. Okay. But buddy, when you go fishing with somebody, I mean, we were laughing on the. We're cutting across the big water, and we were talking about Jim's brother, and Jim's brother works as a muskie shop, but he's got the best partner ever because he won't say anything.
Yep. Yeah.
There's no
dancing one spot, and usually catches a lot more fish than me.
Right, and it's one of those things of like, but if you're fishing with a buddy or a pal, you know, there's no hierarchy there. But that's the thing is, like, when we're in the boat and the three of us in the boat, we're discussing what the scenario is and sharing information or ideas. But what I can tell you is what Jim had said about boat control. So what we utilized to win the tournament, right? And I should say this, and we probably talked about it. There are two fish caught in this entire tournament, right?
Right.
We caught them both. That's it.
You bet.
Nobody else hooked a fish. Nobody else had one in the net. Nobody else landed anything. Nobody else converted in the period of 30 hours. And it is what it is. I mean, I'm not sitting here going, oh, look at us. But that's a fact. That's what happened. No one else hooked, landed, nothing.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
You know, and we're always humble, but the things we're talking about in the podcast matter. And you know, we're into the cold front stuff here, folks. Pay attention, which is boat control. So in that scenario, what we were doing is the classic move is we're always looking for hot fish, right?
Yeah.
At any given time, I've always said 10% of the fish are hot, 90% are not.
Sure.
Do you want to fish for the minority or the majority? Well, in a cold front, guess what? They're all not hot.
Yeah.
They're all awful.
I agree. Yeah.
I fish like it's a cold front. 365 days a year has served me well. I'm boring. I don't do anything too exciting, but the results speak for themselves.
Well, and were always adapting too, to not dictate, but lend advice to what the three of us should be doing. Cause I don't think, especially the first day, was there one time where we all were throwing the same presentation? No,
never.
Not the first day.
And that's one thing I'll say.
The fish were low and slow, and they were probably buried in the weeds and inactive fish that were there.
Yeah.
So it's like, how are we going to get down to them and put one over its head? Then that's where spotlight, spot lock
comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Boat control,
which is
pound an area, fan cast it.
Which is boils down to this. If you have spot lock on your boat, you know what I'm talking about. You can hit it and it'll stop your boat. Some of you are going, I don't have spot lock. I can't afford it. Cool. You can afford a cinder block you steal from a construction site.
Yeah.
Don't steal anything, okay? Listen, legal disclaimer. Home Depot probably sells a cinder block for $2. So, a piece of rope and a cinder block is spot lock. Guess what we did before this came out like 4 or 5 years ago?
Anchors.
Yeah. And yep. So there's a lot of guys that were like, well, I don't do that. And they just drift and they drift exceptionally fast. For years, I was dropping anchors, right? We're going to fish this. Yeah. And with the rope, I would feed us out 20, 30, 40 more feet. The trick in this scenario is nose into the wind, spot lock into it, right?
Yep.
And then you drift back to your next spot half a cast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Anytime you really need spot lock, you don't need to cover water real fast, in my opinion.
Sure.
Right? And so we would drift half a cast, spot lock again, drift half a cast, spot lock again. We're in this one strip, and the way we won this tournament was fishing, what, 300 yards of weeds?
Yeah.
Not exciting. Not this win where you go, wow, they just decimated the lake. No, we found one spot, and we stuck and stayed and made it pay.
And it's tough. Yeah. It's like, you know, after a while, you're – you know, repeatedly over and over fishing the same area, mm-hmm. you can, the shoreline's right there. You got a point of reference. It's just like, you know, we've already hit this mm-hmm. area. So right. Mentally you got to overcome that.
Right.
Yep. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So we'll go picking back up where we were. So day one, it is blowing something fierce. Mm-hmm. We're out there. I'm wearing my shameless puck. I'm wearing my Steve Paul signature Musky Shop hoodie, folks.
Nice.
Pick it up. just wait till the wristbands show up, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Jim.
I was wearing my signature JSE Possum Blood Edition.
My question is.
Sweatshirt.
Did Musky wristband change your life, Jim?
It did.
It did, you know, folks. It did.
It
Thank
did.
You, Musky Wrist.
Thank you, it's, Musky Wrist.
I love Musky Wrist. Awesome.
Before I used Musky Wrist, my life was falling apart.
Right.
But thanks to Musky Wrist, I can fish effectively and smile at the end of the day.
Every moment of every day was hell on earth until I got Musky Wrist from the Musky Shop.
Yep. Jim, any testimonials on your end?
Tell us about.
We don't have them yet, folks, but hopefully we do soon. They are on order.
I'm making
honestly,
fun.
Goodness, though, that we laugh about this, and we have all kinds of laughs in the boat, yeah. Just like we're talking right here. But I can tell you, those things, you put a couple wristbands on, and it keeps your joints of your wrists. You know, you're throwing
from getting sore.
You know, wet October tubes, mm-hmm. crankbaits, whatever. You know, double tens. Your wrist, it does keep them warm. I don't want to get off topic here, but man, it really does make a difference.
Dude. That's the joke. Like, we get like questions at the app or stuff like because of the videos are like, "Was he wearing a wristband?" I wear that wristband like every day because I'm casting all day long, and it actually does help. So we're gonna have some like, and Jim didn't just get wristbands; he found like the right compression of wristbands. And so you wear these, and it gives you the compression on your wrist, so your wrist isn't getting all swollen up. So if you don't fish a lot and you go, like, I'm going to grind 12 hours a day, here shortly we'll talk about it. I swear, folks, is I wear a wristband every day, and it's not – they look ridiculous. Like, I have a tan line. Have you seen that tan line on my arm where it's like I have the Musky wristband tan line?
Yeah, it's hideous.
It's hideous. It's like – you see how Irish I really am. under that, it's very pale. Some would call it phosphorescent. But but Musky Wrist. Sorry, I'm laughing. They actually help. But during the course of that day, it's so bad, and we're out there just pounding. We can't hear each other. The wind's blowing. It's taking your hoods off your heads is why I brought up the hoods.
Yep.
But what we did is we kept drifting that. Spot lock, cast, cast, cast. One thing I'll say that we focused on was the clock drill, right?
Yeah.
So if what Jim's fishing out of the back of the boat, it's bouncing so hard, he's in a life vest. And he's throwing 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. We're going around the clock and we're making sure that we're saturation casting these spots before we drift off of it and go. But to tell the story, at 5 o'clock, 5:30, boom, fish on.
Yep.
We had fished that area 6-7 times already.
Yeah, at least, you bet.
And I don't personally believe that fish was there. I think he moved in.
Yeah.
But the fish that were in open water suspended were not hitting.
Yeah.
And it became a matter of pounding an area until the fish show up or they turn on. Right?
Yeah.
Boom. Right. End of day one, moving on. We go into day two. Only fish that's happened in that entire tournament. We go into day two on this thing, back to cold front, just awfulness. High bright sun, dead flat, calm, but not calm, right? It's like there's a surface wind, but everything else, there's nothing moving up top. Everything's moving on the surface. Still big chop, but just nasty. And we discuss it. We didn't get up in the morning. We talked about what are we going to do, and guess what? We did the exact same thing.
Yep.
Right? And on the second day, it turned into a matter of I'm throwing a hellhound, and I'm working it so slow. And you guys have heard, if you listen back to old episodes where we talk about it, now is the half spool Steve thing, right? Slow, slow, slow. Right?
Right.
I'm working that bait so ridiculously slow that it's falling in between weeds, getting down there and getting the fish's attention. Boom, muskie in the net. So to summarize, what we did was we slowed down. We really narrowed our search and scope of where we were looking, and we stuck and stayed and made it pay. What else would you guys throw out there that we did that really made sense or you think made a difference on that tournament?
I think the big thing too is, you know, we've talked a little bit about it, but it's so easy to get in our boats and to fish a spot and okay, nothing here. I'm going to go to the next spot, nothing there, whatever. And then you just keep going. And pretty soon you're just running all over the darn place. And we just learned, and it's the stick and stay, make it pay thing. It's definitely something to it. If you're running all over, you're not productive, you're in the wind and out of the wind, you're not putting anything together. And we'd seen the fish there that when we first got there, so we knew there was fish there. We knew they didn't go somewhere. They just didn't bite. We just had to stay there.
Yeah, a few might have slid out a little bit, but, you know, it's just like they're going to come back in. Remember Saturday? Remember that perch fisherman?
Yep.
Yeah.
He was catching fish.
You bet.
You know, and said hi to a guy, anchored in a little tiller and in one spot, kind of on the end of our 300-yard stretch there. And it's like, yeah, he's catching perch, you know.
Yep.
11 feet of water right in the weeds. It's just like, okay, well, and again, trust your electronics. You know, the bait's in there.
Both you guys have
There wasn't a whole lot of green weeds on that lake. You know, the other spots we looked at were way sparser than what we were dealing with. So, you know, we were very confident with that. It's just like, okay, there might not be a ton of fish in here. There's a few in here for sure. You know, we're getting follows every once in a while. They're buried in the weeds and they're not very active right now. So stick with it.
Well, that's the thing though, is musky anglers. I don't think anybody wakes up and heads out on a musky trip and says, I want to catch 10.
Right? Yeah.
They go, I want to catch a fish.
Mm-hmm.
And in a tournament like that becomes a matter of, we need to catch a fish.
Yep.
I have to catch a fish. Doing the things that others are unwilling to do. You know, the adage of it has to be dead flat calm and just the worst conditions ever come before I'm going to throw a glide bait. Not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get down there where the fish are and you're getting to structure, cover, whatever it may be, low and slow will always pay off. And
yep.
It just goes to show. I mean, I've never fished Minnesota. I've never been, I mean, that area right there, I've driven through it a million times going to Canada, but I just sort of wave as I'm going by.
Yeah, right.
Is all the stuff we talk about in the podcast will work. And yeah. When things are bad and conditions are awful, if you stick, stay, make it pay, and downsize, slow down, muskies will respond. They will, and the problem is this, we all are just dying for this explosive bite.
Yeah.
Right? You want this, just this amazing topwater explosion of this.
We knew that wasn't going to happen, though.
No.
Not that weekend.
No.
It wasn't going
to
happen.
And you have to look at the scenario where you go, what's realistic? Right? Do you want to catch a fish or do you want the show? If you want the show, go home because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It just simply is not. If you yeah. want to catch a fish and you want to be successful and you want to further your musky fishing prowess or your career, narrow your field of search, narrow your presentations. We were not changing presentations that much.
Mm-mm.
You know, another thing I would note is this. We noticed in the cold front, we knew we were in a musky spot because all the other predators were on the outside.
Yeah.
Jay went through, how many pike did you nail in that one day, Jay? Five? Six?
In the boat, four or five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including that 36. Yeah. Good
nice
pike.
Ones. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we were constantly downsizing,
right.
But, you know, the assessment was we don't want to throw baits too big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's any kind of color tie-in with what we were doing, white baits seem uh-huh. to be good. You know, from Thursday on in the warm front conditions, those colors were bringing fish up. So we did that, and, yeah, I think Friday, you know, you couldn't find a bait small enough to try to get stuff going. And, you know, we got a few fish following during that approach. But, again, couldn't be small enough at one point. You know, it was like we were throwing some Red October tubes, which is always a great presentation in that.
Rubber is always good.
In that scenario, at times I thought that, you know, the presentation might have been a little bit too fast. But, you know, one person had to stick with it. And I think by Saturday I was sticking with that, but I went from a 10 to a 7.5 inch tube.
Mm-hmm.
And, unfortunately the pike liked it a lot. So,
oh, yeah.
But you know, hey, that's what I was running majority of the day Saturday. While you guys experimented with different jerk baits, crank baits, small spinners, mm-hmm. a lot of different stuff.
We had better.
Steve was even, you were even weighting, you know, stuff down. You were mm-hmm. adding weight to stuff down and run deeper. If it was a blade or a spinner bait, you know, at times you were running presentations down into the weeds so slow that the blade was barely turning.
Yep.
I mean, painfully slow retrieve.
Remember at the beginning of the tournament too, as we were planning, we hit the water and Steve's like, okay, Jay, you throw this and this, and Jim, mm-hmm. you throw this and this, and I'm going to experiment.
Right.
You guys kind of see if you can get a pattern
anchor.
Together on what we kind of are good at, the baits we're maybe good at.
And then someone
Steven would just would experiment on all different kind of things so that it would help either catch something for sure, but put some sort of a pattern together.
Or mark it off the list. Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone switched baits during that period, you know, we'd kind of make it known. It's like, hey, I'm going to go to a ace bait here or something like that. It's like, okay, cool. You know, I'm going to stick with this. You know, there was constant communication.
A lot of that, too, is we are talking about good boat partners, right? The first thing I'll say is, like, when somebody gets on my boat, I say, what do you like throwing? What do you prefer to throw? A lot of young guys are like, I love gliders, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're on gliders, and I'm going to fish fast, right? or you like this. I like rubber. You guys, both of you like rubber. I know that, right? Both of them, Jay and Jim, both like throwing Red October. They both are throwing Bulldogs, Medusa. So that leaves your boat partner to go, I'm going to compliment them and do things that they're not doing or cover water they're not doing. So how quickly can you cover the water column, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And this brings it like to fruition in some sense of the solo angler needs to do it all.
Yeah.
Right? You go, what makes somebody a musky guide, right? Before you were a musky guide, or you say you're a musky guide, or you want to be a musky guide, can you catch a musky under any conditions on the appropriate bait class that you need to throw in that scenario? Right? So a good guide will be able to go, okay, I can throw rubber right now, and I know exactly what to do. I know what the strike will feel like. I know what it's going to feel like, how he's going to hit it, and how to land him. Right? So, you know, the goal for a solo angler, you don't have to be a guy, but you go, I'm good at cranks, I'm good at dive and rise, rubber, all the bait classes. So you've got to complement one another to find a pattern. I mean, what we did was so similar, and the reason we're talking about it, I could care less about the win. I'm talking about the success of fishing. The win, a trophy, doesn't mean anything to me. Putting them in the net means something to me under bad conditions on unfamiliar waters.
Yeah.
Right. That means
those negative neutral fish.
Right. We effectively checked dive and rise, crank, rubber, right? Top water, blade, all the bait classes.
Yep.
Gliders, you know, typical jerk baits. We threw beavers, the whole bit.
Yep.
We threw them effectively, meaning that if Jim threw a beaver bait for 3 hours in prime conditions, I went, they're not on beaver baits. Check that off the list. Right? Jay's throwing sand cats and titans and whatever it might be. And you go, Jay's a great dive and rise fisherman. If he's not seeing anything, they're not hitting that. So working through the list of baits in an effective manner. To be honest with you, that entire scenario that we worked through was won. That tournament was won by finding a very small protected area where we could have moderate boat control. We made saturation casts and we made, I hate to say it, but expert retrieves. There were not bad retrieves. Out of the three of us, there was very few times we went, that was sort of not a great retrieve. Every retrieve from cast to figure eight was executed as best as we could. Right?
Yep.
The take home from that becomes you've got you and your buddy Daryl are going to fish Saturday and it's a cold front. What do you do? Assess that it's a cold front, recognize it, and admit it. Right? Don't spend the first 6 hours of your trip throwing bucktails.
Right.
Go, yesterday was 77, today it is 67, and is high bright sun, dead flat calm, or is high bright sun and howling wind. It is a cold front. Admit it.
Yep.
We did not waste a single second of our lives throwing or burning bucktails.
No.
Okay? So,
yep.
And we all want that. Trust me, every angler, every musky angler wants to go out there and it is overcast. Like the pre-fishing day is what you beg for. Right?
Yeah.
You and John are headed over there and I hope it's like that. I hope it is just like, bah! You know,
yeah,
boys, we can throw a fat bee and just tear them up.
Yeah.
That's the most fun you've ever seen. But you know, if you go out there and you went out, let's say you went from January 1st to January 1st and you threw a fat bee, how many days would you catch a fish? Like if there was a machine that threw the cast for you and it went all year long and it threw that, how many fish would it catch? Huh? That's the way I look at things. Go, how often is this effective? It might be effective across, you know, if you're looking at Instagram, like a bunch of guys might be catching fish, but on your body of water where you fish, how effective is that bait? 10% of the time, 2% of the time, 0.5% of the time?
Correct, all the time without question.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing is effective all the time. So
what? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in that scenario, you go break down things statistically. What should statistically or historically be effective right now?
Yeah.
Right. I'm hearing from all the pros through a rubber and a cold front. I'm hearing from all the pros through a deep running crank and a cold front. What those pros are hoping that you do is get close to cover and structure where the fish are. Right?
Yeah.
Because they're holding tighter, deeper, and moving slower.
But what did we hear from about 1,500,000 sources before we went to Minnesota about what we should be doing?
Fish the reeds.
Fish the reeds.
Right. You have
bottom fell out of that program.
Yeah.
And Friday morning.
They were, the funny thing is this, all reports were seeing fish.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In my opinion, for what it's worth, I have fished, you name where muskies are, I've fished it with the exclusion of like Maryland. Guess what? Muskies use warm water refuges more often to metabolize food than they use them to find food.
Okay. So what are the chances of catching them if they're in there metabolizing and not feeding?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right. So they're moving them. I promise you, in 48 hours, I heard more tale of more 48s and 50s than I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, it was a lot, man. Wow, that's crazy.
Old Johnny Dinkelstein saw a 50 on Plantagenet. Old Ricky Rick saw him a 50 on Leech. Okay. Cool. Find me one that'll eat. You know, if I'm going to the aquarium, seeing him's good. If I'm going fishing, I want to see him in the net.
Yeah.
Yeah, find me one that'll eat after the cold front. Right. It's Friday morning.
Right. You see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 fish, and they're not acting aggressive, you're at the aquarium. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to assess what is the demeanor of fish. So, you know, when it comes to like the cold front things we're talking about, if you find an area and you go, I've made intelligent, well-controlled passes through this, with the appropriate size class of what things will hit, and these fish just keep looking, you go, is this the right area or is this a refuge? Is this a area where fish are hanging out but they're not actively feeding? You know, I've never been impressed by, I saw 20 fish.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think helped us, you know, just kind of cemented the fact to stay there. Because sometimes, you know, your mind starts to wander, oh, gosh, maybe I should go over here.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd look up and you'd see a little guy, like Jay said, a little guy sitting there catching perch.
Yeah.
Steven looks up and both those guys commented, Steven and Jay both commented, okay, look at all the birds sitting here. Look at all the, you know, there was all kind of activity right there. There was so that just, if you look up at your elements a little bit, it just kind of helps you know what you're doing is will eventually pay off.
Right.
Well, just, yeah, it's like the classic, you know, Al Linder statement, you know, the classic upon all classics.
Lay it on me.
Ready for it?
I love it.
Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success.
Yeah.
I love it.
Hey, that looks like a good spot over there.
Yep.
Yeah, grass is always greener, boys.
The grass is always greener. The other thing I say of this is, I bet you we could have ran that tournament and subsequently won that tournament without an outboard engine.
For sure.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. Possible.
It's fantastic.
We
spent maybe a gallon or two of gas.
Maybe.
Because we wanted to just maybe check out a couple spots.
Right.
Maybe a gallon.
Maybe.
That was an awesome pleasure ride we took Saturday in that wind.
Oh, it wasn't awesome.
It was incredible. 4-foot swells out there, and it's banging. Like, okay, let's go back.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, it wasn't anything there. Right. It's just like we found, it's like the, you know, like on the northwest side of the lake, it's like, okay, cool point. Looks great on the map. Let's check it out.
Right. Check it
out.
Might
be doable. You know, we can, you know, try to check it out. You know, we were really getting thrown around. It was nasty, but
well,
it was a very poor looking area. Wasn't holding, you weren't
no.
seeing good bait there.
And that was
much
the wind
thinner,
side of the lake.
Junkier
yeah.
weeds, you know, and we were on green weeds. You know, this time of the year, there are some areas that have decent weeds at the very least that are kind of browning up, you know, and it's just like not as healthy.
And the thing is this, in tough conditions, right? Just like we fished, whether you're in Tennessee or Canada or New York or Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. all points in between, Iowa, I don't care. When things are bad, I'm concerned about a fish, not the fish.
Sure.
Right. My guide mind goes, a 30 will do. Right. It's the worst. It's the worst scenario ever. And so the way to break this down, if you find yourself in a similar scenario as go, the first place that you saturation cast and work top to bottom, slower, right? Speed is always relative, but the first place that you move a fish, you stick and stay and make it pay.
Yeah. Yep.
It might be a weed line like we did. It might be a break line. It might be a timber line. It might be rocks. It might be a litany of things. Man-made structure. Who knows? But when the chips are down and you've got one weekend off that month and you go, I am so sick of working and I've got a weekend and I would love nothing more than to catch a muskie, because this is what this is all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about tournaments? Who cares about professional muskie anglers? The dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. And literally, that's what I like. If you ask me, what are you, Steven? I'm a professional muskie angler. Stupid, right? Just worthless. Just the dumbest job title of all times. You look at it and you go, this is for personal enjoyment. Your time has correlated to a time that's not conducive to your goals. How do you meet your goals in that scenario? That's it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at the scenario. If it is low-hanging clouds and there is a storm on the way, do not listen to this podcast. If it is slow and awful and it just rained the night before and it's howling or it's not howling, slow down. And the biggest takeaway from this entire podcast, other than me saying slow down again, is I don't mean slow down your retrieves. Slow down everything.
Yeah.
Slow down how often you change baits. How many times a day do we change baits, Jim? 4?
Yeah, not often.
Okay. So if you struggle with that, set an alarm in your phone. Right? I'm going to fish tubes for an hour.
Yeah.
You got a cell phone. Set an alarm. I fished them for an hour. I gave them a good look. Forecast is not a good look. Right? It's not. You like, guys will buy a bait and go, this bait sucks. Forecasts. You don't know anything about that bait. Right? There's so many baits that I've bought and come back to later and go, I'll give it another try. And I just see what it will do. Right, shadow wrap is a good example, or some like the line through trout. Some of these baits are
dying dog or something.
Dying dog, right? Yeah, something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, man. And then you get it later. So, if you want to take it down to tangibles, what you can do, how can you force yourself to do this? Set an alarm 60 minutes. If you give a bait an hour on a good location, something should happen, theoretically, right?
Right.
Give a location an hour. Well, what does that mean? You should do the clock drill, and that's a Joe Bucherism, right? Noon, one, two, three, four. You see it in your head, right? You can visualize it. If you're in the nose of the boat, the nose of the boat's noon. Cover the clock, 1 through 12. Mm-hmm. If you do that one time, and every cast is good, and every time you do that presentation has a great figure eight, and every time you do that, you did that bulldog presentation great, or you did the dive and riser, you did the glider really well, then it's time to move. And you move half a cast out of that. So they overlap. Sure. Right?
Right.
Noon to noon, move half a cast. Noon to noon, pop, pop, pop. You can see this circle, these overlapping circles in your head. Look, think about it, and you go, how do you cover an area? Right?
Right.
Okay? So an hour on this, an hour on that. Make sure we're overlapping circles of casting. Make sure that our presentations are changing, and make sure they are slow, because when muskies are moving slow, the one thing most people do not know is how slow they are willing to move. You can wait all day long to get one fired up. Right?
Right. And we did.
Yeah. This whole sport is a bunch of guys that go out and they dream and they lose sleep and they wish and they pray and they hope for a fish to come up and act hot. Most days they're not hot. That's why it's hard.
Yep.
We talked to other participants in this tournament. I talked to one yesterday. He said, the fishing was awful. And I said, no, it wasn't. I said, I had to go out on the boat every day with one goal, right? A muskie in the net. We achieved that goal every day.
Yep.
That was it. I mean, that was a good day on the water. If you catch a muskie, it's a good day on the water.
Amen.
One is a great day. Two, wow. More than that, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. You just have to force yourself to do it. That's it. Another thing, and then we'll close up here in a second. We talked about on the boat, Jim, we were just gabbing about reels, right?
Yeah.
You know, the people at Daiwa have been really kind to us, Shimano, all these different companies.
Yeah.
I honest to God believe that if more people went to lower gear ratio reels, they'd catch more fish.
Mm. Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The best muskie anglers I know run 5.3 and 5.8s. Pete Mena runs a Revo Toro white. I run a Revo Toro white. Al Frost runs a Revo Toro white. Joe Bucher runs a slow reel. All these guys that are like the people you look up to and go, they're amazing. And they catch a lot of fish. They run slow reels. Right? What I think has happened in our sport is we came out with 6.3:1, 7.7s, 8s, all these different the gear ratios. It is way easier to speed up than it is to slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, so that's something to look at.
There's a place for all that stuff, but I think for the most part, I think you're right on the money.
And so my game plan for this tournament, we're lucky enough to win, is slow down your retrieves, slow down action, slow down how much you're moving your boat. How do you do that? That's it.
Yeah.
What else would you guys throw in there? What do you think was quintessential of what happened there, other than the delicious walleye dinner from Rutgers?
Oh, I just, the camaraderie, just work us three. We, you know, like Steven said it earlier, just us three as people, as anglers, we're all different, but man, we just get along good and we fish really good together. We all do. We get in the boat and I don't know. We just all, it's perfect. And, man, we have a great time. And if you're looking for a buddy out there or somebody to go fishing with, if you get along good with somebody, hop them in the boat. If you hit it off out there, gosh, keep going, you know, just keep going out there. You know, that's,
Yeah, because it's tough to overcome those slow hours, you know. It's right. just like, you know, it's negativity. Tough to keep chatty yeah. and positive sometimes when you have several hour stretches where there's not much happening, and mm-hmm. it's so windy, you can't, like you guys said earlier, you can't hear without pulling your hood down and stepping closer to the guy that's talking to you, because you can't quite hear him. It's so windy, mm-hmm. but, you know, got through it, and it was a really fun experience. I've never fished in Minnesota before and heard a lot of good things. We were on Cass Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the teams were on Leech.
And playing tangent. I can't
imagine that was – and yeah. And there's some really cool water over there.
Yeah.
That was a fun experience.
You bet it was.
I think my big takeaway is never fish with Jay.
Now you've upset me.
Jay is the biggest crybaby I've ever seen. Just,
yeah,
just
whatever.
Nonstop.
Well,
we haven't caught anything in eight minutes.
Shut up, Dave. Shut up. Jim saw the 18-minute mega video I finished last night. Putting out that out next Tuesday. It's kind of a vlog style of the entire trip, including picking up little Stevie from the airport, which uh-huh. was. That's how she started out, crossing the bridge in Duluth. And
it's Tuesday, check it out.
The intro with all the guys. And
you guys will enjoy it.
Yeah, I hope so.
Speaking of, you're talking about Duluth, and I talked about at the beginning of this thing. My trip back was the worst trip I've ever been on my entire life.
Yeah,
you dropped me off on Sunday at 1 o'clock, right?
Yeah, it was in the afternoon on Sunday. Yeah, right.
So I got home Tuesday at 6 a.m.?
Flights didn't go so smoothly is what you're telling us.
It was awful, dude. Like,
I felt so bad.
I have this alert on my credit card or whatever you want to call it. And if it's like X amount of dollars in an odd place, it pops up. And Jody's like, did you just spend like $300 in Duluth? I was like, yeah. She's like, what did you buy? And it doesn't matter if I buy whatever I want. And she's like, what did you buy? I said, that's my bar tab. I was in Duluth for 12 hours. I had like $37 in chicken tenders. Like, it was the worst shit ever. Like, I could have gone to a dumpster, like, and eaten out of the dumpster and had better food. I'm drinking, like, $17 12-ounce Mick Ultras. It was hilarious. And then I get out of Duluth. We get on the plane to Duluth. Everyone in Duluth, you want to see a crowd of mad people, right? Duluth is a tiny little airport. Everyone there is supposed to go somewhere else, right? You don't go to Duluth for your final destination. People are livid. You got people on vacations, people going to weddings. They're like, your next flight. We missed, like, everyone in that airport missed their connecting flight. And I'll say this. When we finally landed in Minneapolis, I have never seen anything more violent in my life. There are so many planes, like everybody's delayed there. And so all these planes are landing relatively at the same time. And there are like old people pushing old people down on those like moving walkways. I saw this old guy, he and his wife were arguing whether they could get on the tram or not. And he finally said, well, if you miss it, it's not my problem. And he got on the tram and she was like walking. It was just like, it was so bad. I saw this one girl. She's walking on the thing and a guy just runs her over with his bag and she like just eats it. And like then she's trying to get up and people are like hurdling her. And like right down from me, there's this flight to New York and it's all these people that are trying to get to New York. They're just like jumping over this woman. And it was amazing. And then I paid like $17 for some Cheez-Its. It was just like ridiculous, dude. And I'm laying in the floor. You know, I've had my mask on for like 70 hours. And I'm laying in the floor. And there's outside of a restaurant, they have the Packers-Lions game on, right? Mm-hmm, and it was the only piece of joy I've had all day long. Like, okay, cool. I can watch the Packers and the Lions for like 5 minutes. And this guy walks out and says, "Turning it off, big man." Just turns it off. And I'm like, great. That was it. You know, so that's how the day went. Like, you can't just leave. Can you just leave the one TV on? That's all. Like, what does it cost for you to leave that on? 8 cents all night long?
Right.
So I'll give you a dollar. And he turning it off, big man. I'm just sitting there and it's like crickets in the Minneapolis airport. And so the only flight they can get back, I live south of Knoxville, but I live in Nashville forever, is I have to fly to Nashville. So Nashville is like 2:45. So then I'm driving, like, so I land and then Jody has to come get me. And then she drives me back to Nashville, or she's from Nashville to Knoxville. Right. So I'm just dying. And then I have to get up. So I got 4.5 hours of sleep and then guided all day.
Oh, man.
And fortunately, the guy who's super cool, he and his wife were super cool. They're podcast listeners. And he's like, "You all right?" And I was just didn't talk for out like a while. I was like, I just had like shell shock. I was like, "Yeah, man, this is great. Muskie fishing." You know, you're just like, it was just awful, you know, and it's just like, you know, and there's I'll say this, there's a picnic table in Wisconsin or Minnesota I'll never forget, Jay.
Two of them.
Folks, you go on that bike trail, you're going to find something you don't want to see. Say goodnight, Jay.
Later.
Say goodnight, Jim. All right, guys, thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thank you.
I've thrown my tubes time after time. I've done my figure eights, but my net's got no slide. And big mistakes.